following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Retreat held September 11th and 12th, 2020. We would like to remind you that the opinions expressed here today are those of the individual and they do not represent OA as a whole.
I want to share my humble beginnings. And I want to say that I really, really do love the theme, faith. But when I saw the acronym, I thought, finding answers in the heart, finding answers in the heart. I was very, very delighted when I read that because I thought, oh, I can go a long ways with that. You know, when I was reviewing my birth and all, and I was looking for the genealogy of my family, and I couldn't find it. I looked here, I looked there, and I looked everywhere, but I found a lot of other stuff. I found a lot of my other writings, and I found a lot of other things that I wasn't even looking for, and I forgot I even had. At one time in my life, I knew where everything in my house was and whatever I had in my house, but I don't anymore because life has just changed too much in all these years. Finding, you know, it's to come upon after a search through experience and study. That's how I find things. That's how we find things. We have to search and we have to experience. And so finding answers in the heart, answers. What answers do I want? I want right answers. I want true answers. I want answers that the God of my own understanding is trying to give me. And my heart, that's the vital center and source of my being, my feelings and my emotions. And so it's my whole person. My heart is my whole person. I would like to say that I'm going to tell my story in the way that I understand it today. It's a divine story. And it's Janice's story. And I think about in the big book and in the OA literature, they talk about their stories. So this is my story as I understand it today. And I want to share the sacred journey and story because I am here where I am and you are there where you are. This is a strange retreat to me, okay? Because I do see you smiling. I do see you nodding. I do see you happy to be here. And I do see people that I recognize. And that makes me feel really happy right now. But this is strange to me to not be in person at a retreat. I have done many, many retreats and conventions in many, many locations. But this is my first regional retreat. I mean, not virtual retreat. And so I'm very happy to have been asked to do this. Thank you again. I am here. I am going to be looking down because I have a lot of notes and I can't remember all of this. And I think it's important that I share it the way it happened and the way I see it and the way I understand it. Because I'm here to bear witness to God's power, to God's love, and to God's way of life in my life. Because from the moment I was conceived and burst into this world, it was a hot Monday night at 1:30 a.m., August the 7th of 1939, 81 years ago. I was born by the light of a full moon and a coral lamp. I was born in the country, Route 2, Gonzales, Louisiana. I was born in the house that built me. My paternal grandmother delivered me because my daddy had gone to get the doctor and I came before the doctor got there. My paternal grandmother could not speak English. She could only speak French. And she understood English, but she couldn't speak it. My mother did not know how to speak French until she married my daddy. And then she had to kind of learn how to speak French so she could communicate with her mother-in-law. So together, they understood that I was a girl when I was born. And I was wondering this morning, I wonder what my grandmother said when I was born. I said, you know, I'm going to look up the word girl in French, okay? And so I looked and I tried to listen to it, how it was pronounced. And I think it said feed. That's how you say girl in French. So, is that right, Elizabeth? I see you shaking. Okay, I practiced that because I knew people used to call me Teet Feed, okay? And so I was trying to, I don't speak French, but I am French, okay? Because in the genealogy, I learned that my great-great-great-grandfather came from France and came down to Nova Scotia. And, you know, so I'm really a Cajun, okay? I'm proud of it, okay? So anyway, I was sharing with someone I sponsored that I was trying to learn how to say girl in French. So Elizabeth said, I said it right. I said, you know, I said, ever since I've been in OA, people, if I don't do things right or say things right, they'll correct you. Okay. You have to believe that because I've been corrected many a times in many a places that I didn't say something right or do something right. But, you know, I'm a willing learner and everything. But, you know, another thing that I really understood, you know, if we can survive the fellowship, we're going to be able to survive because there's a lot of us in there that are strong-willed and opinionated and judgmental. And we really do maybe sometimes use our virtues as well as our vices against each other. So, but anyway, I knew today that was something new that I learned that I wanted to share. But anyway, I was sharing with somebody I sponsored, I was trying to say the word fee, you know, a girl. And she said, what is a young horse name? And I said, you mean filly? She said, yeah, that's what I want to say. I said, well, it's not filly, but I am a filly, okay? So anyway, I had fun with my new learning skills today. Words are very, very special to me and very, very important to me. My grandmother had 12 children. And she was only 17 years and 9 months when her first child was born. I didn't know her that well. And one of the things that I was looking up the genealogy was to see how old I was when she died. I was 4 years and 4 months old when she died. And that's what I found out on the genealogy. But I have been really, really having a great time reading all the genealogy because, you know, as I go on with my story and all, and most of y'all, a lot of y'all know me already, that I got married really young, you know, and sometimes I just want to beat myself up because I did get married that young and all, but that was the signs of the times at that time. And when I read the genealogy and I see how young these women were when they married and how young they were when they had children and everything, I was just programmed that way, I guess. And I just matured really early, but so far, you know, after 64 years, Jim and I are still together. So I think we must be doing something right. I hope I get to share my sweetness with him through the years and everything. But I have to say, we are aging right now, okay? And I don't like that too much. Jimmy's 7 years older than I am. And so he's 88 and I'm 81. But we're both real, real healthy. But he slowed down a lot in the last couple of years and everything. And with this pandemic, we're with each other all the time. All of this pandemic, well, I guess it's about over 2 years. We haven't been away from each other at all, okay? And the thing of it is, I was just really traveling all over the place for about 35 years, okay? And now here I'm home. But definitely am doing the best I can with it and knowing that the computer is really helpful. We are having phone meetings here in Houma on Monday night and on Thursday morning. And I just love those phone meetings because I have my friend from Texas and Los Angeles and different parts of Louisiana and all of that are on my phone. And, you know, somehow or another, I just don't really want to care if it goes back. But, you know, I know a lot of people are really missing face to face. But so far, I'm really not because I'm really getting a lot out of it. Okay. I was born the last day of the full moon and the next day was the last quarter moon. And so, and I was a fifth child of six at that time. And I was born right in the middle of what is called the silent generation. I thought, now what is the silent generation? You know, I think Elizabeth understands what that is. So, you know, I had to look all that up. Didn't really understand it too much. But what I do understand is we just didn't protest and all that. But we got married young and we had children young. So I could identify with that part of the silent generation, okay? I was born right in the middle of the silent generation, between the greatest generation and the Great Depression. So, I mean, people that were around me and all were affected by all of that great, the depression and the greatest generation. So we're all connected in some kind of way. And that's why the genealogy really pulls me back to who I am and what I am. And also, it was right in 1939, it was right in the beginning of World War II, okay? I was born under the sign of Leo, and the ruling planet was in the sun. And the president was Franklin D. Roosevelt. I don't know what that means to y'all, but it means a lot to me because it's history. It's history. You know what? I share from a humble place of awe that God's grace has taken me to this place in time because the radio was the main source of my entertainment at that time. And now look at all what I've been able to experience in my 81 years of life and my 42 years of Overeaters Anonymous. God has taken me through all of this history. I will continue with this silent generation thing about people getting married young and having kids young, because that is all part of my story. I would like to say that the years before the beginning of my life in 1939, my mom was born in May 8, 1908, and my dad was born March the 31st of 1909, and so she was 10 years older than him. So I don't know if that was a problem or not, because they did not stay married. They divorced, and my mom was only 18 and 6 months old when she had her first child, and my daddy was only 17 a few months old when their first child was born. So nobody told me anything about getting married young or having kids young, because I mean, they had all did that, okay? Well, anyway, when I was born, the parents that I was born to, their life was very complicated and very complex, because in 1933, they lost a seven-month-old baby, and that was their third child. The two oldest boys were 4 and 2. And when I was 2.5 years old, their fourth daughter, a child, when she was 5 in the early January of 42, you know, the troubled world, the World War II, my parents lost that daughter, and I lost my playmate. So I really believe that that caused psychological problems for me. And I would like to say that I was still nursing the breast at 2.5, because my mama said that she used to use that as birth control. I don't know, I never did that. So I know that I was abruptly taken off of the breast, and that I believe that that probably affected me, because I was taken away from my mom and my home for about 3 days. And when I came back, my mama was surely in a great depression after having lost a second child. And my playmate was gone, and my daddy was gone, because he had already found a mistress and he wasn't there. And so I know that my mother was suffered a great loss through her life. Then many times, you know, my mother was in grief and loss. And, you know, even though my parents weren't living together at that time, my father did visit my mother, and she did get pregnant. And 9 months later, she got pregnant, and my little brother was born, my younger brother. He's 4 years younger than me. I would like to say that even through all of this, I had a lot of joy as a young girl. I love the outdoors. I liked school. And when I was 11 years old and in the fifth grade, I joined the school band. And this is where I learned discipline and working with others and following orders and practicing and walking straight. That was a great training for me in my life. I belonged. And I had this for 7 years. And I really value that. We were very good. We would get superior when we would do concerts and when we would be in competition. And I loved the walking, you know, the parades and all. I loved all of that. And I loved what Cindy shared about me dressing. My mama and my neighbors and all used to think I was so vain and everything because I did like to take care of myself. But what I have learned through the years is that makes a person feel real. It makes them feel whole. It makes them feel healthy. It makes them feel happy. And those are the things I want to be. I want to be healthy. I want to be happy. I want to feel good. And I want to like the way I feel in my own body. And so I'm continuing to primp, okay? Food did nurture me at a very young age, but it was really the fats and the sweets and the starches. That's what, you know, I would gravitate toward that. And when I was 12 years old, my weight went up and I started dieting. 12 years old. I mean, that's a sad thing for a 12 years old to have to start worrying about their body and their weight. And my poor self-image began to take over in my life. 1 month before I was 11, my period started, okay? That's really very young also to be able to all of a sudden be shifted into high gear that, you know, if you have sex with a boy, you're going to get pregnant. I mean, that's kind of my education, okay, about sex. Never was really explained to me and everything. But the other thing is that I went to bed until I was 10, okay? And I slept in a baby bed until I was 10. I understand why my mama did that because it was easier to clean up the sheets and everything. And I was tiny. I wasn't that big. But it caused me to feel like I was in a cage, like, and the whole world was not open to me. But since I matured and I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I feel like the whole world is mine because I have been to all 10 regions in this Overeaters Anonymous World Service, okay? I have been on 4 continents. I was in Europe for 12 hours, okay? This barefoot country girl coming from sleeping in a baby bed has seen the world. And it's because I have this disease. And it's because I found all of you people. And it's because y'all encouraged me to do service. And when I was encouraged to do service, I learned whatever I needed to learn to be able to do the position. And sometimes I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I was doing it anyway, okay? I was doing it. And if I didn't do it right, somebody said, do it this way, Janice. And I learned to do it that way. I had never flown in an airplane until I did. I was an alternate regional rep for COLA Inner Group. I belonged to Central Office of Louisiana Inner Group, and I did a lot of service in that capacity. Also, I had never did so many things. I learned how to fly on an airplane. I learned how to make reservations on an airplane. I learned how to travel. I learned. I'm a learner. I'm a seeker. I'm a learner. And I'm finding answers in the heart. Okay, finding answers in the heart. I have to seek to find those answers, okay? And so when I was in I never went to Inner Group until I was in the program 7 years. I had a firm foundation on my recovery and my abstinence. And my abstinence is spiritual to me. It's the spirituality of my life to be abstinent. And I'm grateful for that. And I walked away from my very first Overeaters Anonymous meeting with abstinence. And I have been committed to that and working towards that and living that way for 42 years. And I'm grateful for that. I came into OA April the 4th of 1978. And it was at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. And it was a place that I knew about because it was at the church I was attending and it was in the community center. I would like to say that before OA, I was addicted to soap operas, okay? And this meeting was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and all my soap operas were over and I had my food cooked for my family and everything. And that was before microwaves, okay? Boy, did I ever come into another generation when I got a microwave because I could cook that food and I could leave and go to the meetings and all that. They didn't have to fuss because mama wasn't home for their food because my youngest son, when I came into OA, he was 15 and he worked at a service station, filling station, right by the house. And when he would see me leave to go to my meeting, they told me this, that he would say, there goes my supper. he thought he wasn't going to have any supper because his mama wasn't home, okay? Anyway, I had those kids fall rotten for taking care of them and everything. And so that was a big, big adjustment for this domesticated girl, wife, mother, since she was 18 years old, to be able to start leaving home, to be able to go do OA service. But I did it. And they were not all that happy sometimes, okay? But they were glad when I came back and they started enjoying seeing that their mama was happier and healthier and not so sad and not so depressed, because I was very, very depressed. And one of the things I was so depressed about was because I took diet pills for 15 years. And the insane things that I did taking those diet pills, I have it all documented, and I'm hoping that tomorrow that I can go into more of that. It's like, I want to share this tonight. I want to share that tomorrow morning. I want to share it tomorrow evening, you know, but I'm trying to condense it so that y'all can come back and listen to the rest of the story. Like, what was it, Paul Harvey? Continue with the rest of the story, because it is a story. It's a divine story. It's a sacred story. It's how I was brought into this world, and the times that it was when I was brought here, and that my disease took me. It took me to a low bottom. It took me to being able to, I'm going to cry because I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that Overeaters Anonymous was available to me. I needed it way before. It was founded in 1960. And that's the year my second child, my daughter, was born. I needed it then. I did. But it wasn't available to me. OA was only 7 months old in Houma when I found OA. 7 months. They hardly knew what they were doing. We didn't know what we were doing. But you know, there was something that was coming out of Los Angeles, California. And that's what we followed. That's what we held on to. And I would like to say that the very first meeting that I went to, I walked away with what was called the gray sheet at that time. And if anybody's interested, it is in our Dignity of Choice, okay? We did not take it away. We did sell it to Gray Sheets Anonymous, but with the permission that we could still use it, okay? So it is in there if anybody's interested, but it's not something to live on forever, okay? But it is a great weight reduction, okay? And after all, I love the OA literature, but when I first came in, I was raised with the AA Big Book and the AA 12 and 12. But in November of 1980, the Brown Overeaters Anonymous book came out, and I loved that book. And I love what they tell us in the appendices. It's a disease of the body. It's a disease of the mind. And it's a disease of the soul. It's a disease of the spirit, I think it says. But anyway, I loved that. That gave me so much information that I really needed and I use today. And now that we're on our third edition of the Overeaters Anonymous book, and those appendices are still in there. They are still in there. But we've added another one, and it's that A Plan of Eating, Teresa Wright, that nutritionist that gave us that information. But something else that is of great, great value to me is Dr. Martin Lerner's article in our foreword to this third edition. And what he says in there is so valuable to me, because he said that he discovered over time that weight was simply the symptom. Weight is the symptom. And that's what I was always trying to move away from, being overweight, being fat, being overweight, and the same things I did to try to keep from being overweight, okay? The disease is the addictions. The disease is the addictions. What I have learned that I have is I have a chronic illness, and there's no way to permanently eradicate it. I'm never going to be able to eradicate it, but I am going to be able to have it controlled, not cured, controlled. And I have recovered from so many, many things, but not from this chronic illness that I have. but I have found a solution, and that's what I concentrate on. And that's where I keep trying to find the answers in my heart about, okay? Because as long as I am putting any addiction into my body, my mind is going to be altered. And I know that. I know that. Because addiction is a disease, and it is a chronic, primary, biological illness in the midbrain. And it is chronic and progressive illness, okay? I know that my illness is progressed in these 42 years, and I'm not willing to take a chance on it grabbing me and killing me. So, but anyway, I really do appreciate Dr. Martin Lerner's information about that. He was a recipient of the Appreciations Award at our 50th anniversary, if any of y'all were there in Los Angeles. I was the Friday night opening speaker there, and Roseanne was there. And that was the last time that I got to see her because, you know, she was ill at that time. So I don't know if any of y'all were in Los Angeles for that 50th. But anyway, he was the speaker there. I had a little resentment though, because he took too much of my time. Okay. But I got over it. Okay. Another thing is that Martin Lerner said that there are different degrees of obesity, which is the symptom of this disease, okay? And a lot of people identify it with compulsive overeating, but there's other forms of the symptom of this disease. And he goes on to say that despite this, he concluded that the more appropriate measure of the problem lies with the physical, emotional, and spiritual consequences, and not the numbers on a bathroom scale. The answers are not on the bathroom scale. And they're not me driving 50 miles in rain, in fog, to New Orleans to get diet pills every 2 weeks, having a fit when I couldn't do it. I mean, it was insane. I bought so many doctor's wives new cars, I tell you. I have a resentment against that too, but it was my problem and I did it, okay? But also in our Overeaters Anonymous, the 12 steps and 12 traditions, I love what it says in step 3. I'm going to read it. It says, the definition of abstinence has been refined over the years as the OA Fellowship has clarified the meaning of abstinence for all of our members. It is important to remember that abstinence is not the exact content of our plan of eating, which we are each responsible to determine and follow as we surrender to the higher power's guidance. This is what it says. Nor is abstinence about what we weigh. Abstinence is not about what we weigh. Although attaining and maintaining a healthy body weight is a result of our abstinence. Abstinence is refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors that create the obsessive thinking about and destructive acting out of food. The most dangerous part of this illness is the mind. The big book taught us that, and I believe that. That is what all the information that I read is, that the main problem centers in our mind rather than our bodies. And so I have to understand what this body is made of. Another thing that I'm really, really grateful for, and it's the information in the appendices about the disease of the body. It's about how many diseases compulsive overeating contributes to a person. And one of the leading ones is diabetes, okay? And I come from a long line of people with diabetes. Even had my grandmother, my mother's mother, had her leg amputated because of diabetes. My father had a blood disease and he had his leg amputated. And I'm gonna say this right now so y'all can feel real sorry for me. My daddy committed suicide in 1989, you know, and disinherited me. And so I dealt with that through years of recovery in OA. I've never had a therapy, but I've had very good sponsorship. Very, very good sponsorship. I have people that have loved me through all my pain. Through all my trying to find these answers in this heart of mine. And I have lost through death 3 sponsors. And that is very, very painful to have to endure. one of my sponsors sponsored me for 11 years. And she got very ill and she kind of left OA, but we stayed friends. She had to have her leg amputated before it was over because she had early onset diabetes, and she did leave OA. And then the next sponsor I had, she sponsored me for 5 years, and she died the day 15 years ago, the day before my last grandchild was born. So I went to her funeral one day and my granddaughter was born the next day. So I was like a replacement, but she sponsored me for 5 years, but I still grieve her. I grieve both of those ladies. And then my sponsor, last sponsor that she sponsored me for 15 years, she just died in November. She had a brain tumor. We don't know how long she had that tumor. I was starting to get really aggravated with her about some of the stuff she was telling me. And now I realize it could have been that brain tumor, you know, that was causing her to tell me these things. So, I mean, you know, we never know why people are telling us certain things. I'm going through another 12-step work right now with somebody that's so amazing. Her husband just died, and I called her. We talked for a little while, and I was telling her how lost I felt and that I really, really needed a new awakening. And she said, Janice, would you like me to take you through the 12 steps? I said, yeah, I really do. I really do. And so we're doing that right now, and we're on the 8th step. But the first thing she asked me to do was to write everything I was powerless over. Oh, my God. I've had almost 60 things. You know, I am just so powerless, so powerless, okay? And then I needed to write, you know, my resentments. Oh, my God, I'm still that sick, I said. Do I still have to write down this person? They were on my first resentment list. She said, well, if they still occupy a place in your head, then you need to put it down there, okay? So I got through that. I learned something about myself a lot through that 4th step this time. Is that I didn't realize how inconsiderate I am. And that was one of the things that I had to address about myself. Because, you know, Jimmy's aging. He's slowed down a lot. He's always around the house. He's slow. Get out of my way. Get out, you know, get out of the kitchen. Get out, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm very impatient about that. And I'm very inconsiderate about that. And so those are the two of the things that I really, really I'm addressing about myself. And also, I never understood this, and she's telling me this in this 12-step work that we're doing, is that there's a fifth column to this, all of this. But it seems like I never went past the 4th column, okay? But there's a fifth column. I don't like what I'm seeing on that column, okay? And I'm telling her that, God, I can't believe that I'm still this sick. You know, she said, yeah, but Janice, you can't remove them. And you have to understand that just gives you another opportunity to try to improve yourself. And so what I'm really understanding is this is just another opportunity to me for finding the answers in my heart, where I can be more considerate of my husband, where I can be not be so impatient with him and everything, because he is such a good man, and I'm hoping he's a godly man. And that's what my last sponsor 15 years kept telling me. Janice, he's such a godly man, you know. And now we're not even able to go to church because of all of this pandemic, but our priest is coming to give us communion every Thursday morning, and I'm just so grateful that, you know, that we have a priest that's doing that for us. And I would like to say that Jimmy was not raised Catholic. I'm a cradle Catholic, still Catholic. Don't like a lot of things about the church, but, you know, that's okay. I deal with it. And so we were married 17 years when Jimmy joined the Catholic Church. And so, you know, that's how much he cared about our family. And that's how much he cared about wanting to be with me and us to be as a family, to worship with God and everything. And some people said, Janice, you finally got Jimmy to join the Catholic Church. And I said, no, I said, if I could have had my way, he'd have been Catholic from the start, you know. But He didn't. And I think it just goes to show you how much courage I had as a young girl, okay? Here I was 14 and a half years old when I met him. He wasn't Catholic. And when he asked me to go steady, I said, I want to tell you one thing. When we get married, we're raising our kids Catholic, okay? And we get married in the Catholic Church. I mean, that's how brazen I was, even at 14 years old, okay? And I told that to a priest one time. He said, he'd have said anything to get a hold of that young stuff, let me tell you. So anyway, Jimmy was a real, real gentleman. We dated for 2.5 years and never really, you know, violated me sexually or anything. And so I just got to love the man. You know, he allowed me to grow up enough to be able to become a wife and a mother. He allowed me enough to see my disease take me to the bottom and join Overeaters Anonymous and be able to travel the world. He lost so much of his wife. My kids lost so much of their mother, but they really gained who she really is. They gained who she really is. And they are grateful that I have OA and of all of the service that I've been able to do. I'm really enjoying seeing you people and looking at. I hope this means something to you. I have a lot I want to share tomorrow and everything, but you know, another thing that Dr. Martin Lerner gave us in the Overeaters Anonymous third edition is that American Society of Addiction Medicine, the definition of what a chronic disease is. And I am so grateful that we have that information. We have it. We have that information. And it's a primary chronic disease of brain reward. We're trying to reward that brain, okay? It's a motivation, it's memory and related circuitries, and it's dysfunction in these circuits that leads to the disease. It leads to the disease, the biological, the psychological, the social, and the spiritual manifestations of the disease that goes on in our brain. It's so powerful to have that information. It's not just what Dr. Silkworth told the alcoholics. It's what our people, our doctors are telling us about our disease, okay? I'm grateful for Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, and I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I am grateful for Roseanne. I am grateful for everybody that I stand on the shoulders of to be able to walk this path and to be able to carry this message, because this is my primary purpose, is to abstain and carry this message. I didn't know if I was going to be able to be effective on this, but am I being effective? Okay. Y'all listening? Are you listening? Okay, if y'all ever want to know what page I'm talking about, y'all can ask me and talk about, but read the literature because it's all in there, okay? He goes on to say, the American Society of Addiction Medicine goes on to say that addiction is characterized by the inability to consistently abstain, okay? Impairment in behavioral control, craving, diminished recognition of significant problems with one's behaviors and interpersonal relationships and dysfunctional emotional response. Like other chronic diseases, addiction involves cycles of relapse and remission. Without treatment or engagement in recovery activities, addiction is progressive and can result in disability or permanent death. That is serious information that I am so happy to have in my fingertips, because disability could be a leg amputation. Disability could be blindness brought on by diabetes. Disability could be macular degenerative with your eyes. Disability could be so many things, okay? And a permanent death. I'm just really, really grateful for being here tonight. And wow. Thank you. I'm going to stop right here. I think I'm out for the night.
Thank you. Thanks, Janice.